Well, of course, he was America's answer to Sputnik. And those of us who are old enough to remember his triumph remember tremendous pride, and perhaps Texans remember with even greater pride, because he was ours. I don't think I really understood how much he was ours until I wrote this story and actually went to his hometown. And as my brother emailed me after he read the story and said, "You know, you made him sound like he could have grown up next door to us." And that's what I hope I gave. Now, certainly he was much grander than that and operated on a stage far beyond what I can even imagine. But his earliest days were certainly things I could identify with, and that's what I did in the story.
Small town Texan. Fascinating story of his early years as a pianist.
Right, and a prodigy, for that matter. I think the article has the little story about him playing for a funeral at age 5 or 6, when the funeral home requested his mother, but she said, "Could I send a student?" And the funeral director never had any idea until he opened the back door that she was sending a 6-year-old to climb up and actually play the funeral. He could read the notes. He couldn't yet read the words.
From there, he just sort of made music his life.
Yes.
While other 14-year-olds were figuring out what to do tomorrow, he had to plan his life 3 months in advance.
Right. He knew that he had a Houston Symphony to play for in 3 months. And I think his mother really was very, very strong. She knew as a musician herself. And she was not just the little old lady music teacher on the corner. She really was classically trained and had studied in New York with a very famous distant pupil of actually Franz Liszt. He was the sort of kid who loved his parents very much, and I think he spent a great deal of time with them. They kept him on the road once he was old enough to appreciate a concert of some sort. He was on the road to Dallas a great deal, going to every concert. He said he grew up sleeping in the back of the car on that highway between Kilgore and Dallas. I think young men, particularly in East Texas, who love great beauty have quite a struggle to find it sometimes.
Well, especially at that time of the world.
At that time, yeah.
And he was performing almost nonstop as well.
I think so. He performed locally. And by the time he was 18 or so, he really had a concert career going. I believe he won the Leventritt Prize when he was 19 or maybe 20.
Let's talk a little bit about this great moment that captured the world's attention.
Mm-hmm.
He was how old when this happened?
23.
And he goes across the pond to a very hostile territory.
For us, we certainly thought so.
Yeah. And what happened?
He loves it. Apparently, he had dreamed of going to Russia since he was a very young child, just from looking at a picture of those onion-domed buildings. He said, "Mommy and Daddy, take me there," and never dreamed he'd get there on his own, but he did. And he was warmly greeted as Mr. Von Kleburn, Mr. Kleburn. I did talk with Russian musicians who were children in the conservatory at the time he competed. They were very aware of it. And one said, "He played our music, but he played it with a freshness that we had not heard, because we were, of course, there were other artists from Europe coming, but Americans were not performing in Russia at the time." And he was, one other one said, "Well, he was so tall." This was a case of the people voting on who should win this prize. And that was an early moment of perestroika, maybe, for the Russian people. There was such an outpouring of love for his performance, throwing roses, throwing family heirlooms at the stage, throwing old musical scores that they had treasured. And they broke the rules and allowed him to come out for a second standing ovation after he played. And then, of course, the judges had all sorts of problems about, "Well, we can't give this to an American." And the two eminent ones said, "If you give higher ratings to the other musicians, we'll give zeros to them." He has won this, but they felt the need to pass it by Khrushchev, who said, you know, did he play best? Okay, he gets the prize. And apparently a great friendship developed between Cliburn and Khrushchev. Cliburn spent some time in his Dhaka out in the country, and doors were open to Cliburn that were not open to your average tourist, needless to say.
His world changed after that.
Oh, yes. I talked to a friend of mine from Beaumont who said her mother was in charge of civic music in Beaumont, and she said she was on the phone immediately to his manager seeing if she could book him into the Beaumont Symphony, which she did, because whoever called first just, yes, we want bookings, we want bookings. And I've talked to people who said, oh, yes, I heard Cliburn in El Dorado, Arkansas. He was willing to go everywhere, and that may explain how exhausted he must have gotten in those years when he was playing, I don't know how many concerts a year, but many, and that's a very lonely and driven life. I mean, you know, he really did pretty much leave the concert stage at 43 or 44, and he lived to be 78. And people who are critical of that just don't know. I mean, I wrote this down from Anton Rubinstein, who was a great musician of the previous century and into the 20th century. And he said, I played 215 concerts in America in 239 days. I did 7 recitals in 9 days in New York alone. May heaven preserve us from such slavery. Under these conditions, there is no chance for art. One simply grows into an automaton performing mechanical work. No dignity remains to the artist. He is lost. The receipts and the success were gratifying, but it was all so tedious I began to despise myself and my art. The proceeds of my tour in America laid the foundation of my prosperity, and on return, I hastened to invest in real estate. And that's what Cliburn did, too. He took the money that he had earned. He invested it well and bought a lot of real estate, I think, in Fort Worth, and was able to continue to fund some of the Cliburn, I think. And but he said at some point he wanted a life. And there's no life when you're leading that kind of schedule, constantly having to perform and then be social with people you will never see again. And you're not building any friendship necessarily with these people. You're just supposed to be pleasant and entertain them. And I think that life could get very old very quick.
And yet here's a man who continued to play.
Oh, yes.
All the
yes.
way to yes. to the end.
Yes.
And he had an impact on his home state even beyond his music.
Yes, yes. The establishment of the Cliburn competition, which was not entirely his doing, but he certainly contributed to it and continued to give it his full blessing. He didn't like competitions very much. I think that's sort of ironic since his beginnings were with competition. But, oh, he said, I feel the pressure those young people feel, and I often just cannot be present when they're playing because I know how difficult that is.
But he never lost the love of the music.
He never lost the love of the music and continued to play. I mean, he played at the White House for Obama at one point. He played for Gorbachev when he came. And it's a magical YouTube to look at. I listen to his music, and I think I can almost identify it when I hear it, even if it's in the middle of it and nobody has told me it's Cliburn. I just think he has a very distinctive, beautiful way of playing from the heart and a singing tone. He wanted to be a singer. He really had hoped to be a singer. And his mother sang beautifully, apparently. But she taught him to play as if he were singing the piece. And that shows, I think, in his music.
Prudence McIntosh, thank you so much for speaking with me.
All right.
Prudence McIntosh is a writer at large for Texas Monthly. You can read her article at texasmonthly.com. I'm Emily Donahue with KUT News.